flown. I have sailed. I have moved about this world of ours, and ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
And you are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 103.1, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge.
You are my sunshine, my only sunshine. You make me happy when skies are gray. You'll never know, dear, how much I love you. Please don't take my sunshine away. The other night, dear, as I lay sleeping, I dreamed I held you in my arms. When I awoke, dear, I was mistaken, and I hung my head and cried. You are my sunshine, my only sunshine. You make me happy when skies are gray. You'll never know, dear, how much I love you. Please don't take my sunshine away. I'll always love you and make you happy if you will only say the same. But if you leave me to love another, you'll regret it all someday. You are my sunshine, my only sunshine. You make me happy when skies are gray. You'll never know, dear, how much I love you. Please don't take my sunshine away. You told me once, dear, you really love me, and no one else, dear, could come between. But now you've left me and love another. You have shattered all my dreams. You are my sunshine, my only sunshine. You make me happy when skies are gray. You'll never know, dear, how much I love you.
This is Bruce Kaplan welcoming you back to another episode of Radio Masterpieces, and tonight do we have two wonderful shows for you. We begin with a great episode from the Whistler series and conclude with Robert Cummings in a World War II episode from Suspense. If you have any questions or suggestions, please don't hesitate to write to me at bruce@radiomasterpieces.com. Well, now let's enjoy our great shows. Thank you so much for tuning in.
Jessica Monroe stared at the manuscript she held tightly in her hand. The manuscript that had suddenly shrouded her spacious office with ugly, threatening memories from the past. Until that moment, the reputation of no member of the Monroe family had ever been questioned, not openly. But there before her were vivid, venomous words, words to shock the sensibilities of any reader. To Jessica Monroe, the editor-publisher of Monroe House, these words produced a curious challenge. Slowly, she closed the manuscript and faced the man who had written the words, Joe Arnold.
Why did you write this, Joe?
For money, and because it's a great story. It'll sell 100,000 copies, if you publish it.
Do you really expect me to publish it? A story written in poison and gall by an ingrate I was foolish enough to employ when no editor in town would let him inside their office?
Maybe you made a mistake.
You rifled the files of this office for what facts you have. And you've twisted them so that you've even made my parents look bad. Very bad.
I bit the hand that fed me.
And again I ask, why?
I wanted to write a great story. Did you read it all?
I read enough.
If I were you, I'd finish reading it, Jessica, word for word, the entire manuscript. It might affect your attitude, though.
All right. How much do you want for this manuscript, Joe?
Well, as I see it, there are two prices on the manuscript, Jessica. There's one if you want to publish it, and another if you want it to press it.
I'm talking about publishing, of course.
You wouldn't dare. Didn't crucify you and your family name. You better read the rest of it. We'll have plenty of time to talk, and we'll need plenty of time to think about how much this is worth to you.
How much time?
All day. I'll be back tonight for an answer. I don't have to ask if you'll be here.
I'll be here.
Fine. Oh, and Jessica, you'll find this out as you read. You're in that manuscript. In a big way.
So that's it, Jessica. One of your employees, Joe Arnold, has written a novel of your family. And Joe has featured you in the Chronicle. You sit there stunned after Joe leaves. It isn't anger you feel, it's more terror, isn't it, Jessica? Joe seems to know a great deal more about you than you thought. Almost without knowing it, you pick up the manuscript again. Begin reading where you left off, searching for further incidents from your past. You read on and on, unaware of time. Unaware, too, that you have another visitor.
Must be a bestseller.
Oh, Mark. I was reading.
Oh, good for you. Always meant to learn myself.
Mark, did you want something important?
Does a sales manager ever want anything important?
Oh, look, I'm not in much of a mood for games, Mark.
Oh, I see you're not. I'm quick, then. Okay, we won't play games, boss lady.
I'm sorry, Mark. I was...
I know. You were reading. That's where I came in. Maybe you ought to buy it, Jessica.
What do you mean?
Just that if any manuscript can hold your interest this much, it must be worth the asking price. But then, that's your business, Jessica, isn't it?
Yes. I guess it is my business.
You're glad when Mark closes the door behind him, Jessica, and you turn quickly back to your reading of Joe Arnold's manuscript. By evening, you've finished, shocked and numb by what you've read. Joe hasn't missed a thing, has he, Jessica? Your own doings and misdoings are vividly reported and twisted in such a way as to bring discredit on your father's memory, even your grandfather's. It's past closing time, and your employees have left the building. Joe's footsteps, Jessica. You'll have to come to a decision.
Had a few drinks to celebrate my victory, Jessica.
Have you won a victory, Joe?
How can I lose? I might as well sit down and be comfortable, huh? Sure. Sure I won, Jessica. Either way. If you publish it, I get money. If you don't, I get more money.
I'm not going to publish it, Joe.
Sensible decision, I'm sure.
I suppose anything this contemptible comes high.
Let's keep it on a business basis.
I'll pay you $15,000 for the manuscript and all its copies.
Nice starting figure, $15,000. Say some more.
All right. How much do you want?
$50,000 and a piece of the business. Maybe a junior partnership.
You must be out of your mind.
The reputation of a Monroe, especially if it's you, worth a small piece of your fortune.
Before I'd let you commercialize this vindictive story, I'd kill you.
That's your answer?
Get out of here.
You don't mean that, Jessica.
Don't you touch me, do you hear?
You try to reach for the phone, but Joe stops you. In one desperate movement, you free one hand.
No, you don't.
Seize a bookend from your desk and blindly wield it at him. You stare down at him, Jessica, and slowly the fury drains out of you. The shock of the deed replaces him. Joe lies there, motionless. Convulsive shiver runs through you. You move to feel his pulse, listen for his heartbeat. And just as you bend over him...
You'd better let me help you, Jessica.
Thank you. whole thing seems like a nightmare, doesn't it, Jeff? Joe Arnold lies motionless on the floor of your office, and beside him, the heavy bookends you dropped after you hit him. On your desk is Joe's manuscript. Your dazed eyes move mechanically from Joe's still form to the bookend to the manuscript. And there, bending over Joe, is Mark Harris, your sales manager. You don't know how much Mark saw. You better let me help you, Jessica. Those are the only words he's uttered till now. He gets up, looks at you, his eyes expressionless.
I'll handle it from here, Jessica.
I didn't mean to, Mark.
Now take it easy, take it easy. Guess it's a good thing you hit him instead of using that gun of yours.
How did you know I keep a gun?
Saw it in your desk once. Sometimes I snoop. Now look, you're in a lot of trouble, but I'm going to help you. The reason I'm going to help you, you'll find out later. But we're not going to the police with this.
Yes, Mark.
Now listen to me. You'll go home now, just as if nothing had happened. Elliot, the night watchman, will let you out of the building. You'll walk a block to the cab stand. Get in one, go directly home. And say nothing to anyone, do you understand?
Yes, Mark, I understand.
You'll go to your room, go directly to bed. Relax, even if you have to take a fistful of sedatives. You'll think of nothing and do nothing. How do the thinking and the doing from here on in?
But, Mark, I don't know what you're going to do.
I don't either. I'm going to start figuring it out. I'll call you later or drop in, after I've gotten rid of... I'll leave now, here?
Well, Jessica, Mark's sudden assertion of strength has you completely in his power, hasn't it? You do just as he says. You go home in a sort of hypnotic state. You do take the sedative. And just as you give in to exhaustion and sleep, you tell yourself that this is all a bad dream. That you'll awake to find Joe Arnold alive again. You do sleep. But a few hours later, you awake with a start and the dream is not over. The voices downstairs tell you that Mark has come and is arguing with your butler about waking you. You hurriedly dress and go down. Mark's face is grim as you lead him into the library and close the door.
You fixed him up pretty good, Jessica.
What shall I do, Mark?
Nothing. It's been done. I carried him down the back way and loaded him in my car and got away without the watchman or anyone seeing him. I don't think they'll ever find him.
But what will they think?
Well, that he's among the missing. That he disappeared tonight. Vanished into thin air.
He was drunk tonight, you know.
Yeah, that makes it better. If the cops ask me, I'm going to say that he's probably in heaven. Or the East River.
But will they believe he just vanished?
That's all they'll have to believe.
It's not all I'll have to believe.
No. Why'd you hit him, Jesse?
Joe, the manuscript, Mark.
Is that a reason?
A story about my family, the Monroes, mostly the present generation. It wasn't pretty. I couldn't bear to have it told Joe's way. But I didn't mean to.
I think I remember you saying once that there were too many writers in the world.
Oh, maybe I did, but I didn't mean to.
Is that Joe's manuscript?
That's the original. But there must be copies, probably in Joe's apartment.
All right. I'll get them. Now, that's part of it.
Part of what?
Part of the deal I'm about to make. For getting myself into this mess and you out of it.
Why are you doing this?
For a loan of $25,000.
Loan?
Which I doubt that I'll be able to pay back.
This loan, do you ever intend to pay it back?
Frankly, no. Well, I'm the best book salesman in the country. You owe me a raise.
All right, Mom. I'll have the money for you tomorrow.
Thanks. And I'll see you tomorrow. With all the copies of Joe's message.
Mark, I've got to know. What did you do with Joe?
What do they do with the dead? Bury him.
Where?
The less you know right now, the better it is for me.
Where, Mark?
Where is my seat? Good night, Jessica.
Well, there it is, Jessica. Mark has disposed of Joe's body. It cost you $25,000, and you don't know where Mark hid him. The money, Jessica. You wonder if it's just the beginning of the payoff. But you're not in much of a position to ask questions or get answers. The next day and all that week, you sit by and watch Mark manipulate the business of Joe Arnold's disappearance. With the police, the Missing Persons Bureau, the office staff. Mark makes it very plausible that Joe went on a binge, disappeared, that he'll undoubtedly show up someday, somewhere. And everyone seems satisfied, Jessica, except Lieutenant Hennigan from Homicide, who's been snooping around the office quite a bit this past week. And then one day, the lieutenant comes to you with a disturbing piece of information.
Arnold's landlady said he was writing a book, Miss Monroe. Do you know anything about it, ma'am?
No, I don't. Of course, Joe often works at home on his book reports, but I know nothing of a book of his own.
The landlady seems to. The last morning she saw him, she warned him to come home with the rent or get thrown out. Arnold waved a copy of a manuscript before her eyes and said he was going to see his publisher. That would be you.
He may have said that, but he didn't come to me with it, Lieutenant. I wonder who took the book to.
That's what we're all wondering. Funny he wouldn't bring it to you.
It's strange.
Yeah, well, don't worry, Miss Monroe. We'll find him or his book that disappeared. In time, we find everyone, even some people we're not looking for. By the way, ma'am, you're not thinking of leaving town for any reason, huh?
No, I hadn't thought of it.
Well, just check with me if you do, will you?
What's the matter, Jessica? Don't you like the music?
I don't like the way that detective told me to stay in town.
Oh, now, forget it. That's what makes a cop, a suspicious mind.
Mark.
Hmm?
Maybe I should tell Lieutenant Hennigan everything.
You don't trust me?
I gave you $25,000, didn't I?
But you're still not sure of me, is that it?
Well, it's hard to be, Mark. I know nothing about you. On the other hand, you know all about me.
Will this help? I was born on a farm near Omaha.
I suspected you were born once.
And at 20, I got sick of corn and wheat, and I went to the coast. I picked oranges, and I fought in a war.
And then?
And then, I was a press agent for a circus, later a jazz band, and finally a movie queen.
Well, what was this movie queen like?
Like nothing. A lampshade on her head and a Cadillac on each foot.
You're a strange person, Mark.
Still don't trust me?
No. No more than myself. With a murder between us.
There's only a table between us now, Jessica. How about let's get out of here? If you're thinking I've got something to say to you, I don't want to stay here. You're right.
You can't read my mind tonight, Mark. I haven't got one.
I once saved a guy from drowning. I jumped into the lake after him and ruined my best and only suit. And when I got him to the shore and revived him, what do you think he did?
It's your story.
He busted me in the mouth. He was committing suicide.
Is there a moral to your story?
Mm-hmm. I should have thought a long time about it before jumping in after him. Maybe you better think some more before you tell the cops what happened to Joe.
This is an interesting side to your character, Mark.
And now that we're alone, there's another side to it. I'm in love with you.
What?
I don't mind repeating. It's really necessary.
But Mark...
I'm in love with you.
When did this romance overwhelm you?
The day I came to work for you, a year ago.
If that's true, you've concealed it better than you think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I concealed it all now. You had $1 million and I had 30 cents. I was standing on the earth looking at Venus. We were just about the same distance apart.
And now you feel you can tell me why. Because you know what I've done?
No. Because now I have $25,000. And I'm in a different financial bracket.
Mark has surprised you, hasn't he, Jessica? And when you arrive home that night, you're confused and somehow even more troubled. You wonder if you can trust Mark, or if his sudden admission of love for you is part of the payoff, too. Next day, you see Mark only once on business, and there's no mention of his love for you then. Late that night, you're at home trying to untangle your snarled thoughts. Suppose Mark does love you, Jessica, what does it mean? But your thoughts are abruptly interrupted.
Yes?
Lieutenant Hennigan.
Oh, Yes, Lieutenant.
I thought you ought to know. We found what we were looking for.
You found... What?
Joe Arnold. Found him in the East River. Mark Harris must be something of a prophet.
I see. When did you find him?
A couple of days ago. We've been running some tests. We'll want you to come in the morning, Miss Monroe. There are some questions.
Of course, Lieutenant.
Make it 10 o'clock, will you? Oh, and Miss Monroe.
Yes.
I think you should know. Mark Harris will be here, too.
So, there'll be questions at the police station tomorrow morning, Jessica. And Mark will be there, too. It's a tormenting thought, isn't it? What Mark might say to Lieutenant Hannigan tomorrow. Has the lieutenant talked to Mark? And if he has, what has Mark told him? You move to call Mark when...
Yes, hello.
This is Mark, Jessica. Has Hannigan talked to you?
Yes, he just called.
You'd better get over here, Jessica, quick. I've got something important to tell you.
You leave the house hurriedly. Your cab makes one important stop before you go to Mark's apartment. A stop at your office, Jessica, to take your gun from its regular place in your desk. You're not certain you'll like what Mark has to say. Your gun is insurance against that possibility. When you arrive at Mark's apartment and he meets you at the door, you instantly notice that there's something different about him, the way he looks, his manner, the way he treats you. Mark has changed, Jessica. An unreal feeling sweeps over you as you check the chair opposite him.
I've been afraid this time would come, Jessica. I've thought about it a lot.
You thought about it? What have you decided to do?
There's just one thing I can do. But before I tell you what it is, I want you to understand that I am in love with you, Jessica.
Go on.
Well, when we see Lieutenant Hannigan in the morning, I'll have to tell him the truth, exactly what happened.
Somehow I knew you'd say that.
Well, it wasn't easy to say. It wasn't easy to decide, but I want you to know now that... What the devil are you doing?
You're not going to tell Hannigan or anyone the truth, Mark. You're
Wait,
not!
Don't use that gun, silly little fool! You don't know what I...
You stare down at Mark, dead on the floor. No, Jessica. Mark won't tell the truth of Joe's killing to Lieutenant Hannigan or anyone. Ever. The very thought that Mark's lips are forever sealed is comforting, isn't it, Jessica? A quiet confidence overtakes you. For the first time, you know exactly what to do and what to say. You go over to the phone and place a call to police headquarters, to Lieutenant Hannigan.
Hannigan speaking.
This is Jessica Monroe, Lieutenant.
Oh, yes, Miss Monroe.
You'd better come to Mark Harris's apartment immediately. He... threatened me. There was a struggle. I shot him, Lieutenant, in self-defense. He's dead.
You know it won't take long for Lieutenant Hannigan to arrive. And when he comes, you'll have your story ready for him. You're composed, Jessica, quite sure of yourself. When the lieutenant arrives, completes his examination of Mark's body, you know that you must play very convincingly the role of a woman who has recently defended her own life.
How did it happen, Miss Monroe?
He's been threatening me all along. I've been so afraid of him. Tonight, when I told him I was going to tell you the truth tomorrow, he came at me. I knew he meant to kill me, so I shot him.
I see. And what is this truth you were going to tell me in the morning?
That I saw Mark murder Joe Arnold. I've lived in fear of my life ever since then.
Well, we were pretty sure it was Mark Harris all along. What we needed was a witness or something as incriminating. Well, he won't threaten you anymore, Miss Monroe. You're going home to bed now. You've been through enough.
Mm-hmm.
Our session tomorrow morning will just be routine. We'll try to spare you everything we can.
Well, Jessica, your ledger has balanced out nicely, hasn't it? Joe Arnold, the writer whose novel was a convenient means of blackmailing you, is dead. And his manuscript is destroyed, too. Mark Harris, the one man who could have betrayed your secret, is also dead. And Lieutenant Hennigan of Homicide seems convinced that your story of killing Mark in self-defense is true. The next morning, you make the trip to police headquarters for the routine investigation Lieutenant Hennigan promised.
It won't take you long, Miss Monroe. Everything seems to piece out okay. This gun you shot Harris with, your gun?
Yes. Yes, it's my gun.
How long have you had it?
Well, I've had it for some time. I never expected to use it.
The gun's been in your personal possession?
Yes. At all times.
Okay. Now, tell me again, exactly what did you see, Miss Monroe, the night Joe Arnold was killed?
Well, I just happened in on them, Lieutenant, on Martin Tiggins. Yeah. They were having a heated argument about something, I don't know what. They were struggling when I came into the room. I called to them, but they didn't hear me. And then Mark picked up a bookend and hit Joe. He fell. Yes. Then Mark saw me and threatened to kill me, too, if I came to the police.
And that's all you saw, Mark hitting Joe with the bookend?
That's all I saw.
Now, that's what's so confusing, but I think I see it all clearly now, Miss Monroe.
Hmm? Well, what do you mean?
Joe Arnold was hit on the head, all right. But that isn't what killed him.
I saw...
The thing that killed Joe Arnold was a .38 slug in the chest.
Joe? Was shot?
And he was shot up.
Mark. He was trying to tell me that...
Mark Harris was also killed with a .38 slug in the chest. And both shots were fired from this gun, Miss Monroe. Your gun. The gun you say has been in your possession at all times.
Said detour. All these bitter things I find should have read that detour sign. Headed down life's crooked road, lots of things I never know. And cause of me not knowing, I now find trouble got in the trail. Spent the next 5 years in jail. Should have read that detour sign. Detour, there's a muddy road ahead. Detour, paid no mind to what it said. Detour, all these bitter things I find should have read that detour sign. When I got right to the place where it said about face, I thought that all my worries were behind. But the farther I go, the more sorrow I know. Should have read that detour sign. Detour, there's a muddy road ahead. Detour, paid no mind to what it said. Detour, all these bitter things I find. Should have read that detour sign. Stuck in the mud, all my hopes dropped with a thud. I guess that my heartstrings are made of twine. Had no willpower to get from the hole that I'm in yet. Should have read that detour sign. Detour, there's a muddy road ahead. Detour, paid no mind to what it said. Detour, all these bitter things I find. Should have read that detour sign. Should have read that detour sign. Should have read that detour sign.
Valley 103.1. Suspense. This evening, The Dead of the Night, starring Robert Cummings.
Helen and I had never been apart since our folks died. Never before that summer when I got a job up at Lake Arrowhead. She was supposed to go with me, wait on tables or something. It was to be our vacation, but at the last minute she decided to stay in L.A. She figured her boyfriend Steve might be coming home on a furlough. I should have known better. My sister was such a kid, but I let her talk me into it, and I left her there alone. That was the beginning of the whole thing. That's when she met him, Phil Armstrong. If I hadn't gone away that summer, I guess Phil would be alive today. All during the time that I was gone, Helen didn't write much, and what letters I did get didn't seem natural. So I was anxious to finish my job and get home. I expected her to be at the bus station, but she wasn't. And when I got to the apartment, I could hear someone moving inside. The door was locked, so I knocked. Helen?
Who is it?
It's me.
Jimmy?
Yeah, open the door.
Oh, Jimmy. Just a minute.
Hi, honey. Since when have you taken to locking the door in the daytime? Helen, what did you do to yourself? Your face. Were you in an accident?
I fell, Jimmy. I fell and I hurt myself.
Well, your eye's swollen shut. Let me look at it.
Jimmy, I have something to tell you.
What are these suitcases doing here?
You and I are going away, Jimmy. We've got to get out of here. I packed everything.
We're going no place till you tell me what this is all about.
Well, Jimmy, while you were gone, I got married.
Married? You mean Steve was here on his furlough?
No, Jimmy. Not to Steve.
But you were engaged to him.
Yes, I know. I got a letter from him right after you left. He married someone he met where he was stationed.
Oh, Helen. Gee,
I was pretty upset, Jimmy, and that's when I met Phil Armstrong.
Oh, but gee, I think you might have... I don't even know the guy.
No, neither did I. I was unhappy.
Well, you just don't go off and marry someone you don't know.
Well, that's what I did, Jimmy. Now, we've got to get out of here.
Huh? Well, but why?
Because there's been trouble.
What kind of trouble?
I'm afraid, Jimmy. It's terrible. He takes something. I don't know what. But sometimes he's crazy.
Helen.
Yes?
Your face. You didn't fall.
No.
He did that. I'll kill him.
He'll kill you. That's what I mean. That's why we've got to get away.
Well, you can get a divorce, can't you?
He threatened me if I even tried to get one.
We'll put him under a peace bond.
What good would a peace bond be, Jimmy, if he killed one of us?
So I let her talk me into running away. I guess I shouldn't have, but I knew that if I saw him after what he'd done to her... Well, anyhow, I'd saved my salary and I had some gas coupons. We didn't know where we were going, but we started out.
I don't know what he'll do when he finds I've gone.
Helen, don't you think we ought to go to the police?
Oh, I'm afraid, Jimmy. I know him. I know what he'd do if he found out we'd reported him.
But they'd protect us, Helen. They'd protect us.
But what if he got to us before they got to him?
And she looked so frightened, I thought it best to let her do it her way. We got to Santa Monica that night, and we stopped at a motel near the water. Well, a week slipped by, and Helen seemed to be forgetting. She didn't jump every time someone knocked at the door, and she began to get a nice tan. I managed to get a job. It was at McGuffey's Potluck Gallery at one of the shooting concessions on the pier. Then one night late, as I came home from work, I heard voices coming from our apartment. I knew who it was, and I knew that from what Helen had told me, it would be foolish for me to go in unarmed. So I ran back to the shooting concession. It didn't take long, but when I got back, the lights were out, and the sound of voices was gone. I tried the door. It was very dark. And then my foot struck something soft and heavy on the floor. I snapped on the switch, and the room was flooded with light. And I looked down into a dead man's face. It's funny how in the biggest, the most important, the most terrifying moments of your whole life, you remember little tiny insignificant things. I remember that I set my alarm. It was to go off at 5 o'clock. I'd set it to wake me up that afternoon. And a bird started to chatter outside as I stood there shivering with cold and terror, looking down at that dead man's face. Although I'd never seen him alive, I knew this was Phil, her husband. There was a deep gash over his eye, and the blood still flowed from it onto the floor. I stepped over him and I ran into the bedroom. Helen! Helen! But there was no one in the bedroom, nor in the kitchen. And then I heard the front door open.
Jimmy!
Close that door, Helen.
Oh, Jimmy!
Close it, do you hear me? Be quiet. Turn the lights out. Be quiet, I tell you.
Oh, Jimmy, what have I let you in for?
Stay where you are. Don't move, Helen.
Who is it?
I don't know. Keep quiet.
Oh, Jimmy, it's Mrs. Gordon.
Shh.
She's going to unlock the door.
Oh, just a minute, Mrs. Gordon. I'll get something on.
Jimmy, what's going on in there? All the transcripts are cleaning.
Just some friends of mine, Mrs. Gordon. They were having a party. They're gone now.
Jimmy Barton, you should be ashamed of yourself. Now open this door. I want to talk to you.
Well, I'm not dressed. I was taking a shower.
Well, slip something on.
Well, I'm tired. I just was going to bed.
Jimmy, I told you I wanted to talk to you. Now will you open this door?
She has a pass key, Jimmy.
All right, Mrs. Gordon. Just let me get some clothes on.
I'll give you 2 minutes.
I didn't know what to do. I knew she was determined to come in. Mrs. Gordon was a nosy old woman. She meant well. She'd taken it upon herself to mother Helen and me. She was always coming into the apartment with her pots of jam and her bowls of soup. I knew no matter what I said, nothing would stop her.
What'll we do, Jimmy?
We got about a minute left.
Helen, take him by the feet.
Oh, no.
Helen, take him by the feet.
It's no use. It's no use.
We started half-dragging, half-carrying him towards the bedroom. The rug slipping along the floor as we moved. We'd just gotten into the bedroom, and then...
Time's up, Jimmy. And as long as your good mother isn't here to look after you, I'm going to myself.
We can't leave him here. She might come into the bedroom.
Quick, the bathroom.
Jimmy, where are you?
What if she comes in here?
Pull back those shower curtains.
Oh, Jimmy, we can't.
Don't argue. Pull them back.
Jimmy, I can't get his legs in.
Shh. Here, I'll double them up. There. Pull the curtains together, quick.
Jimmy, what's been going on in here? Why, look at my rugs. Has there been a fire?
Just a minute, Mrs. Gordon.
Jimmy, what's on this floor and on this gas heater? Is this blood?
Jimmy.
Get me a razor out of the medicine chest.
Here. What are you going to do?
Never mind. You stay here. I'm coming, Mrs. Gordon.
Just as I suspected. You've been fighting, and you've hurt yourself. Now let me see your hand.
Oh, it isn't bad, Mrs. Gordon.
Oh, no wonder you didn't want me to come in. Where's Helen?
She's out. She hasn't been here all evening.
Well, let's look at that hand.
Oh, it isn't bad, Mrs. Gordon, really.
You let me see that hand. Oh, there. Why, Jimmy, this is a bad gash. Have you disinfected it?
Yes, I have.
Well, let me bandage it for you.
But this towel's all right.
It's not all right. Where are your bandages and things? In the bathroom?
No. I mean, I don't have any.
Now, you're just saying that, Jimmy Barton, because you don't want to be bandaged. You're not fooling me. I'm going right into the bathroom and getting...
No, not the bath. I don't have any.
Well, I'll just see for myself.
No, Mrs. Gordon.
Jimmy, why, you drip blood all over this floor. Here, let's look in this medicine closet. Uh-huh. There, I knew it. There's some tape and some gauze, too.
Mrs. Gordon, can't we just do this in the living room?
No, we'll do it right here. Now, here's some alcohol. Come on, put your hand over here.
We stood there, and she bandaged me, and I kept wondering where Helen had gone. And then I saw the shower curtain move slightly, and I knew. For a moment, I thought Mrs. Gordon had seen it, too.
Jimmy, just look at that shower curtain.
Yes.
Goodness, you smeared that with blood, too. Well, I'd better clean things up for you before Helen gets home. Why, you'll scare the life out of her.
Well, I'll clean it up, Mrs. Gordon. You've done enough. Thanks very much for taking care of this hand.
Well, all right. If you don't want me to. Now, you'd better get some sleep. I'll see you in the morning. Good night, Jimmy.
Good night, Mrs. Gordon.
Oh, Jimmy.
Helen.
I had to hide somebody. It was terrible.
I know. It was the only thing you could do.
Jimmy!
Yes?
Jimmy, I forgot to tell you that I'm having some painting done tomorrow. So you'll have to be out of here early. It's hard not getting painters these days without making them wait for the tenants to get up, you know.
Yeah, all right, Mrs. Gordon. I'll be out first thing in the morning.
Mm-hmm. Well, good night.
Good night.
I will have to get him out of here.
Yeah.
Where will we take him?
I don't know. I've got to think. Here, Helen, you try and get some rest.
Jimmy, let me go to the police. Let me tell them that... I did it. Let me tell them what he was. They won't do anything to me.
No, no. You try and rest. What time is it?
It's about six.
Six. We've got 2 hours before the painters get here.
What are we going to do, Jimmy?
Let's see. So there's a car. No one will see us if we take him through the service porch into the garage.
Then what?
I don't know, but that'll get him out of here anyway. I think I can do it alone, Helen.
Listen, Jimmy, we're in this mess because of me. I'm going to help you. I'll be ready in a minute.
When I went into the bathroom, the shower curtains were standing open. His legs had slipped from their cramped position and they'd pushed themselves into the room. He sat there with his head twisted down and his chin digging into his chest. I took a washcloth and it was awful. I wiped the blood off his face, just in case anyone saw us. They might think he was just sick. I tried to lift him, but I slipped. And his head made a hollow sound as it thumped down on the shower floor. Helen helped me get him into the luggage compartment of the car.
Where are we going, Jimmy?
Helen, won't you please stay in the apartment, please?
No, I couldn't. I'm going with you.
Helen, haven't you done enough?
I'm going with you. Too late now to wish that I hadn't... Where are we going?
To the pier, the Santa Monica Pier. Beyond the concessions, you can drive a car on the end there.
Lucky it's so foggy.
Yeah. What time is it?
5 of 7.
We'll have to act fast. This fog will be clearing soon. It'll be harder to get him out of this car. Now, you stay here. I can manage this alone this time.
Oh, I'll help you, Jimmy.
You stay here, do you hear me?
All right, call me if you need me.
I'll go around the back. Keep your eyes open.
Yeah. Jimmy.
What?
Someone's coming.
Who is it?
I can't see. Jimmy, it's a policeman.
What?
It's a policeman. Jimmy.
Oh, it's all right. I know him. It's Red Davis. He's the beach patrolman. Hello, Red.
Well, hello, Jimmy. Say, when do you get your sleep? Didn't you close up after that swing ship dance last night?
Yeah, Red, but I couldn't seem to remember if I'd locked up the old shooting gallery, so I came over this morning to have a look around.
I see.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is my sister. Red, this is... Helen, this is Red Davis.
Hello. So you're an early riser, too, huh?
Yes.
Well, the fog's clearing up. It looks like we're going to get some sun today for a change, huh?
Yeah. Well, I guess I'll be getting back. I think I'll try and catch a few more hours sleep. Well, so long.
Yeah, so long. Oh, say, Jimmy.
Yeah?
Say, Jimmy, I have to take my wife over to the nursery today to pick up some plants and stuff, you know, and I don't have a trunk on my car. I wonder if you'd let me have yours.
You have
to drive me over to Malibu this afternoon, Jimmy.
Yeah, I'd forgotten.
You can drive her over in my car. How's that?
Well, you see...
That brother of yours thinks I'll wreck that beautiful car.
Oh, it isn't that, Red.
Okay, then I'll be over about noon, and I'll leave my car for you till I get back. Huh?
Well, I won't be home at noon, Red.
All right, I'll meet you at the entrance to the pier. How's that?
Oh, all right, Red. Well, so long.
Yeah, so long.
I just said
you'd... Well, if I didn't, he'll go over to the apartment looking for us. And you don't want any policemen over there, do you?
Oh, no. No, of course not.
We've got to get out of here fast. As we drove along the ocean, the fog cleared up rapidly. It was almost 8 o'clock and some kids were already out on the beach playing around. Then I saw a group of early picnickers. They were unloading their blankets, umbrellas, and things. I guess it was from them I got the idea, from seeing them.
Jimmy, your gas is pretty near on empty.
Yeah.
You got any more coupons?
No, they're all used up. We're going to have to do something soon.
I know, Jimmy.
We can't go back to the motel with the painters there. And we can't leave him in the car. Red Slab will see us and pin us down to using it. There's only one place left.
Where, Jimmy?
Helen, listen. I'm going to let you out of this car. Oh. You can't help me with what I've got to do now.
No, Jimmy, I'm staying.
Don't argue, Helen.
I'm not leaving you, Jimmy.
Get out of this car, do you hear me?
No.
I haven't time
Jimmy,
to argue with you.
Please.
Now get out.
I won't do it, Jimmy.
Yes, you will if I have to push you out.
Jimmy, you're hurting me.
There. Now go back to the motel. Get off that running board, Helen.
I can't leave you alone, Jimmy. I want to help you.
I'm not blaming you for killing him, Helen, but now you've got to help me do as I say.
What, Jimmy, what?
I don't blame you for what you did. He deserved it. But now you've got to help me handle things.
Jimmy, you've got to let me...
Goodbye, no. Helen.
Jimmy! Oh, Jimmy, don't leave me! Jimmy!
I watched her out of the mirror. She kept calling me. I drove on as fast as I could. I knew what I had to do when I was one chance in a million. But I had to take it. And I didn't want her to be part of it. I could keep him on the beach that whole day. Then maybe I'd be able to get rid of him when night fell. I wanted to drive further along, but I was afraid I'd run out of gas. So, I settled for a deserted strip of beach not far from the motel. I had my swimming shorts and a blanket and a towel in the car. And I got out. I looked around carefully. And then I opened the luggage compartment. It was the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. But I started taking his clothes off. I managed to get my shorts onto him. Lucky we were pretty near the same size. And then I closed the door. And I went out onto the beach and I spread my blanket out on the sand. And then I went back for him. When there were no cars in sight, I carried him over to where I'd spread my blanket. And I placed him onto it face down with his hands folded over his head as though he were just sunbathing. Then I spread my towel out a short distance from him, and I laid down on it, and I tried to look relaxed. People didn't start to arrive until about an hour later, and gradually, little groups of sunbathers started to form. He and I, we looked no different from the others. No one paid any attention to us. I was beginning to feel that everything was going to be easy once it was dark again, but...
Jimmy! I've been looking all over for you!
What? Oh, hello, Mrs. Gordon.
Where's Helen?
Isn't she in the apartment?
No. What time did you go out this morning?
Well, I couldn't sleep.
Well, didn't Helen come in at all last night?
Well, yes, she did, but she left early, too. Said she was going into Los Angeles.
Oh, I was so worried about her. Well, the painters came, Jimmy, and everything's a mess. I think I'll sit down here with you a while. You're not with anyone, are you?
No, I'm not.
Goodness, I wish I'd brought along some oil. Looks like it's going to be a hot day. You know, these days that start off foggy are very deceiving.
Yeah, they are.
This is a real treat for me, Jimmy. I never get out on the beach. I think I'll have a nice day of rest for change. Later we can get some sandwiches. The seat's on me.
Well, Mrs. Gordon, no, I hadn't planned on spending the day at the beach.
Oh, it'll be good for you, Jimmy. Not healthy for a boy your age to be working all night and sleeping all day.
But, Mrs. Gordon, you see, I...
Jimmy, do you know that man over there?
Which one?
Why, that one right there.
What? Well, no, I don't know him.
Well, he's lying so still. His back's going to get an awful burn.
Yeah.
Well, do you suppose he's asleep? It isn't good to sleep in the sun, you know.
Mrs. Gordon, do you think that the painters will be finished by this afternoon?
Huh? Oh, well, I hope so. My, a person can get an awful burn in a day like this. You know, someone ought to speak to him.
Mrs. Gordon, wouldn't you like to go for a walk?
Oh, I'm not one for walking. You go ahead if you like.
Well, I...
Come on, Dick, pitch it over here.
Oh, those kids. You children, stop that. You're getting sand all over me.
Oh, sorry,
Lee. No need to play here. There's a playground over by the pier. Now, you just get away from here.
Don't pay no attention to her. She don't own the beach. Pitch it over here.
Well, I'm coming at you.
Uh-oh. You hit that guy on the beach.
There. Now, see what they've done. They've hit that poor man. Now they'll get what's coming to them.
Mrs. Gordon, sure you don't want to go get some sandwiches or something? I'll just stay
not
here and...
Not until I see those two hoodlums get what they deserve.
Shh. Why, gee, I'm sorry, mister. Could we have our ball?
Now, look at that. Ball's right in the crook of his arm. He's pretending he's asleep. He's not going to hand it to them. But
Just wait till they reach for it. He'll give them something besides their ball.
Oh, what are you waiting for, Dickie? It's our ball. Just take it.
Oh, hey, mister, could we have...
Go on, take it. Here, I'll get it. Thanks, mister. I got...
What's the matter? Gee, he's cold.
What'd you say?
He's cold. His arm's like ice. I just touched it.
You probably hurt him.
A little ball like this couldn't hurt anybody.
Well, nevertheless, it did. Here. Now, let's have a look.
And then she started moving toward him. I knew it was useless to try and stop her. And then she reached over and put her hand on his back. And suddenly she was screaming.
Oh, God!
Before long, there was a crowd of people around us, and someone called the police. I wanted to run, but I knew that would be the wrong thing to do, so I just stayed there, numb-like, watching things. When the police came, they started questioning everybody. Mrs. Gordon was first.
Why, he'd been there all morning. I came early, and he was here already. Just like that. You know, with his face down. Just like he
was. Was there anyone else around when you arrived?
Around? Yes, Jimmy was here. He was here all alone with him. Weren't you, Jimmy?
Yes, I was.
Yes, you see, he was.
Doesn't anyone know this man? Do you know him, Jimmy? I told you kids to keep away from here now. Did you hear me?
We discovered him, didn't we? If it hadn't been for us.
Yeah, and you don't even know a clue when you see one. Look at his fingernails.
What's that? Oh, the child's right, officer.
What's that?
Now just look for yourself.
Let me see.
Yes.
It looks like powder. Something flaky. Are you sure none of you people around here recognize him?
Recognize him? Well, I've never seen him. Officer.
Huh?
Why, that blanket he's lying on. Why, it's from my motel. See, it's stamped right under where you moved his hand. Oh, dear. Look for yourself. See, it says Seaside Motor Cabin.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you're sure he wasn't registered?
Why, I'm positive.
Is there anyone else around here from your hotel, from your motel?
Jimmy, look.
Jimmy!
Here comes Helen. Look, she's crying.
Mrs. Gordon, I ask you if there was anybody around here from your motel.
Huh? What's that? Oh, yes, Jimmy Barton here. And that girl. You see, she's his sister. They've been with us for several weeks.
Jimmy, what have you got to say, Jimmy?
And suddenly everyone was looking at me and at Helen as she ran towards us. And like a fool, I started to run too, in Helen's direction to ward her off. I didn't get far, however. Someone caught me by the arm.
Jimmy, I've been looking all over for you.
Don't say anything, Helen. Let me do the talking. Don't say anything.
But Jimmy, when you forced me out of the car this morning, you said you didn't blame me for having killed
him. Helen, be still. Don't.
Jimmy, I didn't kill him. I thought you had. I was helping you get rid of him because I thought you'd done it.
I'm sorry, kid.
Helen. Helen, are you telling the truth?
I swear it, Jimmy. Phil and I were quarreling. He'd been taking something again. He was like crazy. And
this guy, Phil?
And I knew there'd be trouble when you came home from work. So I got out the back way and I went looking for you on the pier. When I couldn't find you, I went back to the motel and I found him on the floor. I thought you...
But Helen, why didn't you say so?
You didn't give me a chance, Jimmy. You just took it for granted that I didn't.
Well, but who did kill him, Helen?
That's what I'm trying to tell you. Nobody killed him.
What are you talking about?
I went to the motel a while ago to wait for you. While I was there, I remembered about Phil last night. How strangely he'd acted, and how he hadn't been able to walk straight, and how he'd almost fallen several times while we were quarreling. And then I saw the gas heater, Jimmy. There was a sharp edge on the top of it with blood on it. He must have fallen. He must have.
Oh, but Helen, we've no way of proving that.
There was something else, Jimmy.
Yeah, what?
The wall above the heater was scratched, as though someone had clutched at it to save himself from falling. There might be fingerprints. There might be.
Oh, no, that's no... Wait a minute. Plaster. Hey, Red, that flaky stuff you found under his fingernails, that might have been plaster. And it was. Well, that's about it. Everything checked back at the motel and the autopsy showed he was full of dope. But I guess it was really Mrs. Gordon who saved our necks for us. Besides talking so loud and so long that they'd probably acquitted us just to get rid of us, she did dig up a witness who'd heard Helen and Phil quarreling and who'd seen Helen leave alone after he threatened her. Well, everything's all right now. Helen and I are beginning to forget.
But it's Mrs. Gordon who's making quite a nuisance of herself on the beach these days, as she goes along poking all the sunbathers and asking if they're sure they're all right.
When I was a young man caught in the girls, I played me a waiting game. If a maid refused me with tossing curls, I let the old earth take a couple of whirls, while I plied her with tears and lure of pearls. And as time came around, she came my way. And as time came around, she came. Oh, it's a long, long while from May to December. But the days grow short when you reach September. When the autumn weather turns the leaves to flame, one hasn't got time for the waiting game. Oh, the days dwindle down to a precious few.
About this world of ours, and ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
And you are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 103.1, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge. The door is slowly closing for Radio Masterpieces, but be sure and tune in again next week from 9 to 10 p.m. to listen to more wonderful mysteries from the 1940s and 50s. This is Bruce Kaplan signing off. Radio Masterpieces is a Seattle Miracle Incorporated production.